Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSilicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, January 16th, 2011, and this is show number 295. Well, a lot of you signed up last week for the NoSilicast news, so evidently this mailing list thing is a good idea. The first automated letter went out last week after the show. It's the one that sends you the excerpt of the show notes every time I publish them. Now, I've had some feedback that the episode title gets smashed font-wise, and I'll be darned if I can figure out how to fix that. You see, in MailChimp, which is where I create the mail, it's simply a HTML-looking sort of tag that says, go get the feed. So the only place it's possible I can control that is in Feeder, but I'm not really sure how to do that either. I have a mail into Steve Harris, the guy who wrote Feeder, to see if he can help me out with it. Anyway, hopefully I'll crack the code on that, but you don't need to send me an email anymore saying, hey, the title's all smashed up. So anyone who says faceplant is a gimmick is way off. It is totally not a gimmick. I use it all the time. Today I was playing with my new light box, trying to take pictures of a little tiny carving my dad made, and I was having white balance issues. I also wanted advice on how best to go about taking photographs inside a light box. Well, Bart agreed to do a faceplant with me, and for over an hour he gave me suggestions on things to try, telling me when to decrease the aperture size because my depth of field was too small. We played with manual modes and aperture priority, with and without the flash, we changed lenses. The whole time, Bart is seeing everything I'm seeing, including settings on my camera, the view on my Mac, how the lights are set up. It was awesome. Now, I do plan to do a video of the setup we worked with while explaining the steps to get it all to work. It was really fun. But in the meantime, it was really, really neat to be able to use FaceTime, FacePlant, to share the experience with Bart and get some help from him. So anyway, anybody who tells you FaceTime is stupid is just wrong. Now, I'm committing treason in this next review. I'm going to talk about LastPass, which is a direct competitor to the beloved 1Password from AgileWebSolutions.com. Good friends of the show, Gita Lai and Stu Helm, both work at Agile, and I don't think there's a single member of the Mac Roundtable who doesn't use 1Password, so I'm really going against the grain here. But I promise, there is a problem to be solved, so bear with me. Before I dig into that, though, we have to back up to the main overarching problem that these applications solve, and that's finding a way to have secure passwords that aren't repeated all over the place and without having to remember my tiny little brains what all those crazy complex passwords actually are. My memory of passwords is really bad, so what most of us do is turn around and just use the same password combos over and over and over again. But there was a compromise just about a month ago that a lot of username password combos got let out. And so pretty much if you'd reused a password combo, you were pretty much going to get killed somewhere else, someplace maybe you really cared. I had been lazy and not done it, no matter how many times Bart reminded me to do it. But I decided to finally get off my butt and change my password strategy. Now, I promised I'd tell you why I looked into LastPass with all of the fans of 1Password surrounding me. Having a great password manager is only helpful if you can get access to those complex passwords whenever you need them. What if you need them if you're at work and you live in a locked-down Windows world where you're not allowed to install software applications or even browser plugins? Unfortunately, this is the one place 1Password can't follow you. I'd been searching for a solution to this problem for ages when I finally heard about LastPass from LastPass.com. They have browser plugins, they have the iPad, iPhone methods of getting to your passwords, but they also have one thing more. They have bookmarklets. Now, even in a lockdown Windows world, they let you make bookmarks, right? Well, the LastPass bookmarklets come in a pack of three. The first one you use to do a one-click login, entering that one master password to get you into LastPass. With the second one, you can click to enter the credentials for the site you're trying to enter. It automatically figures out where you are based on when you had entered the password before and just shoves that username and password right in there. The third bookmarklet will autofill forms for you. For example, entering your name, address, credit card number, and even that pesky little three-digit code that you can never remember from the back of the card. All of this works even on a machine where all you're allowed to do is create bookmarks. You can also always simply navigate to the LastPass website and view your password vault. From there, you can view your passwords for each website or simply click on the website to log into it. Now, as I've been talking about giving LastPass all of your critical password and credit card information, you're getting that little cold chill down your spine, aren't you? That this could go horribly wrong if the LastPass people turned out to be dishonest. Well, I think I can put your mind at ease, and it won't be platitudes from me saying, don't worry, trust them. Nope, I don't want you to take my word for it, but I hope you'll take the word of noted internet security expert Steve Gibson of GRC.com. He explains in detail on Security Now, episode 256, exactly why LastPass is secure and how much you need it. I put a link in the show notes to both the audio podcast as well as the text transcription of the show so you can listen to it or read it yourself. In a nutshell, though, your LastPass passwords are encrypted and you're the only one with the encryption key. They can't get to them even if they wanted to. So, I started down my new password strengthening path using LastPass on my Mac. That was easy because with the LastPass plugin, every time you enter a username and password, a little thing pops down from your browser bar saying, hey, can I remember this password for you? This is a lot like the pop-down that some web browsers offer you, but in my past research, I found that these were not encrypted, so anyone who got a hold of your machine, they could have access to all of your passwords. LastPass does not work that way. No one getting to your machine can crack the code unless they know that one username and password you use to get into LastPass. Now, I know what you're thinking now. Sure, it's secure, but geez, Allison, it's so easy if I just use the same password everywhere. I know I should change it up, but these kinds of things are just so hard. Well, you know what? It's not hard at all. I came up with a new password strategy, and every time I logged into a site, I changed the password, and LastPass would say, hey, I've detected a password change. Would you like me to update my database? Heck yeah, that would be awesome. You can even make your life be easier than it is now. Easier than it is now. Get me. Now, this is not harder, but easier to allow this auto-filling in of your passwords. In some of the sites, I go to the URL, like say to manage my website, and boom, my credentials just fly in and the site lets me in. It's awesome. It's easier than remembering a password. Now, just in case you think I'm like all brilliant and stuff, you may have noticed I haven't yet gotten up the nerve to allow LastPass to generate secure passwords for me. That's the really good step when I get my nerve up for that. I know it's the next step and it looks really easy. You just use a pull down in the browser extension to generate it. You copy and paste it into the website and after that it's going to remember it. But I was scared. Well, finally I made the leap. Well, I made the leap once. I went to Blockbuster.com for the first time so I could check to see if my local store had the Blu-ray version of Season 3 of Dexter in stock, and I was faced with a Create New Account screen. Before I could even think about making up a password, down popped LastPass offering to auto-generate it for you, for me. Well, I stood at that precipice, and I realized that the worst-case scenario was I could walk the 3 blocks to Blockbuster and get my DVD, so I'd make that leap. Well, LastPass showed me a crazy password and asked if it looked good to me, like I'm going to complain. I said, sure, and boom, it auto-populated the form. When I clicked OK to create the account, LastPass offered to actually save the site for me. Thank goodness, because I was not going to remember that crazy password. So I guess I can say that for my first time out of the gate, auto-generate worked perfectly. Now let's talk again about the bookmarklets. I tested them out on my Windows box at work, and I had mixed success. First, you have to generate the bookmarklets. You log into LastPass.com, and then in the left sidebar, you click on Bookmarklets, and a pop-up window shows you your 3 items, and you're supposed to drag them to your bookmarks bar. Now you go to a site for which you have a password. First, you click on the LastPass login bookmarklet and log in again. Then you can click on the Fill Bookmarklet to enter your credentials to that website. If you've given LastPass your address and credit card information, that sort of thing, for autofill, those items are available then with the Fill Forms bookmarklet. Now, I did say I had mixed success on this. I tested first with Firefox 3.6.3 on Windows 7, and it didn't work at all. Every time I tried to log in, it would say, okay, you logged in, and then when I tried to use the bookmarklet, it would say, but you haven't logged in yet. I then tried it on Internet Explorer 8, and it worked like a dream. Came through with the promise I was hoping for. I wrote to support at LastPass.com, and they told me to just redo the bookmarklets, but that didn't fix it. The last update I received said they were still investigating, and then they closed it again, so I've written back and said, yeah, you haven't really fixed this. So I don't know if it's a problem with the combination of Firefox 3.6.3 on Windows 7 or what, but so far that's not working. One last note on bookmarklets. Is anyone else, every time I say bookmarklets, thinking of that Friends episode where John Lovitz is stoned and he keeps saying tartlet over and over again? That's what I kept thinking of when I was writing this. One thing I would recommend is that you do some organization as you create all your passwords on LastPass. They offer to put them in folders for you, but I got lazy figuring, it didn't matter. But when I installed the iPad and iPhone apps, I realized the only easy way to use them there was if they were organized up a bit. By the way, I paid the $12 a year for the premium account because it gave me a LastPass-specific browser on the iPad iPhone. Not sure I'm all that fond of it. Even though they now own Xmarks and they even offer a bundled pricing of Xmarks and LastPass, that browser that they gave me on iOS didn't sync my Xmarks bookmarks, so it's kind of lame to use to the user. Anyway, I could live with it, but I hope now that they're together, they'll get some better integration. Bottom line time. I know that 1Password is a fabulous product, and I have such respect for Stu and Gita and the work that they do, but I was missing that one little bit that made it not work for me, usability on a locked-down Windows box. If you're not locked down, then you have two really viable choices, 1Password and LastPass. The good news is that we do have choice, and LastPass is actually free, unless you want the premium features. But hey, $12, not bad. So there's pretty much no excuse left for using lame-o passwords. Check it out at LastPass.com. Well, this week I was working on the Zamps website. You know the one I told you about last week, the one with all the cool drawings? Well, I added some more images, but I had trouble getting them into the gallery on the front page using the WordPress gallery function. I searched online and on forums all over the place without success. I found a lot of them that explained how to create a gallery, but it didn't tell you how to add pictures to a gallery. My buddy Niraj figured it out. He is brilliant at WordPress, and I figured I'd better take some notes so next time I'd remember because it was so arcane to get into this. I started to just type it into a note for myself when I had one of those "don't" moments and realized this would be way better if I did it in screen steps. That took me a little bit longer, but now I've captured all of the menus, I've got little arrows and sequence numbers reminding me of the order, and I wrote the actual instructions too. Then I got an even better idea. I put it on podfeet.com in my tutorial section. And better yet, I then posted it in the WordPress forums so the next poor slob who stumbles in there looking for help will actually find it. I'm going to have to break my tutorials down now into sections because the menu's getting so long it's really hard to navigate on my website. That's how fun ScreenSteps is to do documentation. If you haven't bought it yet, head on over to ScreenSteps.com and enter my coupon code NOSILLA, that's my name spelled backwards in all capital letters, for 25% off the purchase price of ScreenSteps Desktop or Pro.
How come I always have to?
It's time for Dumb Question Corner.
Well, this week's Dumb Question Corner comes from Kate from Michigan. Now remember, dumb questions are those questions you have that you figure everyone else has figured out, and you're the only one left who is too dumb to figure it out. And you're wrong. If you ask your dumb question, I guarantee you someone else had that same question. Here's what Kate had to say. Hi, Allison. This is the Duchess of Dumb back with another one. Here it is. I don't get Twitter. Well, I get the basics, the concept, the @s and the pound signs, but what I don't get is how people integrate it into their lives. I'm only following about 40 people, including you, of course, but there's a constant stream of messages. Do people keep an eye on Twitter all day and respond as they go? Or do you give yourself a set time and time limit to use it? I guess I'm looking for a workflow. I've tried several Twitter apps and just downloaded the latest from the new App Store. How do people manage tweets? How do I use the mark all red button? It's always grayed out. How do I keep my place? Why is there a clock for my sent tweets in my profile? What is that magnifying glass? There's always a random bunch of strange names when I click it. Thanks, Allison. You're a lifesaver and a life saver. And you know I love your show. Keep it up. Always subscribe. Kate from Southeast Michigan. Dear Duchess of Dumb, let's break this down into two parts. The first part is about trying to grok Twitter, trying to simply get the workflow. And your second question is actually more about the tools. Pretty tricky sneaking in two dumb questions, or at least seven. You said you get the meaning of the @s and pounds, but let me review it for everyone else. You see, Twitter sends you messages in three ways. There's the general stream of tweets, which is everyone you follow yapping away about whatever they think is fascinating, from their cheese sandwich at lunch to the Large Hadron Collider, all depending on who you follow. I try to follow people a little more interesting and don't talk about the cheese sandwich that much. But hey, if you're into cheese sandwiches, maybe you want to do that. The second pile is your at replies, the little at symbol. These are tweets sent by any old person, whether you follow them or not, but they're trying to get your attention by putting an at in front of your Twitter name. So let's say you're not following me, but I have something fascinating I just read about Kalamazoo, Michigan, and I think you might find it interesting. I would put an at symbol in front of your Twitter name, and then that message would fall into this pile that's separate from the general stream. The third pile is your direct messages. These are very specialized messages that can only come from people you choose to follow. So imagine you're some international superstar, and people are adding you all day long, but you want to be able to hear from your real friends when they have something to tell you. A DM is a great way to go, a direct message. The other thing about DMs is that they're private while everything else is public. So, for example, when I woke up one day and Steve had DM'd me, there's something in my eye and I'm at the emergency room, that was a private message just to me. Now, as a sidelight here, I'm not sure most normal people would tell their wives they're going to the emergency room using a tweet. A normal person might just gently shake their wife's shoulder and say, "Honey, I'm going to the emergency room." But anyway, you get my point. Think of DMing as a way to have an essentially instant messaging chat, except it's not instant, and it's not email. So it's short, but it's direct, but it's private. Anyway, it's there whenever the person checks Twitter or their email because it notifies them there too if they get a direct message. Sometimes, like this week when I was trying to get Nightwise's attention, I sent him an email and he didn't respond, so I sent him a DM, which I knew would give him another email and the direct message in case he checked Twitter. Now, you mentioned the pound symbol messages. That's actually not one of the three piles. The pound symbol is used to designate what they call a hashtag. This is much easier to explain in an example. Let's say Macworld Expo is going on, and you didn't get to go, but you want to keep up with what's happening. People at the show will write something about the show and add the hashtag #MWE11 in their tweets. Now, then you could go to any number of sites like hashtags.org or even just over at twitter.com, type MWE11 in the search window there, and you'll see what people are talking about. I tested it right now at hashtag.org and typed in Tunisia, and they even have a graph showing the dramatically increased number of pound Tunisia tweets that are going on and shows you a list of the tweets on the subject. This is a great way to follow an unfolding story. Like 2 years ago at Blogworld, we were all following Pound Balloon Boy to find instant updates on his fate. All right. Now that we've explained the jargon, which you didn't ask me to explain, what's a good workflow on Twitter? Well, it all depends on how much time you have, either at a computer or on your mobile device, and also depends on how many people you choose to follow. I follow around 400 people, which means that mainstream is really more of a raging river going by for me. I simply dip my face into the river a few times a day to see what's happening if I'm bored. If you follow just a few people, then it's actually practical to scroll backwards and see what people were chatting about while you were away having a real life. I created a couple of lists that are way more interesting to me, gives me a subset of those people. I have the NoSillaCast Live list, which is awesome because these are people I feel like I know because I've chatted with them live in the live chat room. And it doesn't matter that I've never met them in meet space. I mean, I talk to these people every week, so we know each other. They also share a common interest with me, all about the Mac, so I know that whatever they're chatting about will usually interest me, which is not true of the huge list I follow. I also have a family list, which occasionally has stuff from my daughter or son, but mostly it's how I find out what Steve's been digging out of Reddit to share with us. If I don't do that, there's always, "Didn't you read my tweet, honey? I tweeted that." Anyway, my third list is of the Mac Roundtable, and that's always good reading. I really recommend that list. I probably read at least half of what's been said in all of my lists overall, but I don't stress about it. I don't worry that stuff's going by and I'm missing it. I do make sure that I read all of my ats first and my DMs right away, just in case Steve's at the emergency room with his eye. But the mainstream and the lists, those are just when I feel like listening to them or reading them. Now, I don't have to set myself a time limit because I do have a mobile device, so that does help a lot. It's only when I'm bored. One thing I do find is that you have Twitter on that mobile device, it gets like 10 times more fun. You can easily read 3 or 4 140-character tweets while in line at Starbucks. Stuck in a meeting? Catch up on Twitter. All I've really described is how I personally use Twitter. It'd be interesting to have Switcher Mark describe his workflow, because I swear he always comes back with a clever answer to anything Steve or I say. I'm not sure if he's got it glued to him and he reads it all day long, or if we just happen to be online at the same time, or if he managed to read every single tweet of everyone he follows. I'm just not sure. Well, I hope that helped. Now to the second half of your question. It turns out you're asking about a very specific tool. The application that you downloaded from the Mac App Store is called Twitter, which is kind of a lame name. It used to be called Tweety, but then it got bought by Twitter, so they called it Twitter. So it's kind of confusing because you think of it as being synonymous with Twitter when it's just really one of many apps. It's also not my favorite Mac Twitter client by far. In fact, I uninstalled it within the hour after I downloaded it. I put it back in so I could check it out to answer your questions. Oddly enough, though, it is my favorite client on the iPhone. The reason the Mark All As Read menu was grayed out for you is that this Twitter app automatically marks all as read if you scroll to the top. If you look at the icons down the side for the at and DM, you'll see a glowing blue ball next to them if you haven't yet scrolled. So let's see the other interface questions. The clock on your sent tweets is simply a choice they made for an icon. It doesn't mean much other than the fact that they're in time order. You can click on the same menu on the at symbol or star for favorite tweets. The only tweet I ever favorited was when Jeff Gamet tweeted that he sneezed so loud he set off a car alarm. Anyway, and then finally there's one to show and edit your profile. The magnifying glass is what you might expect. It's a way to search all of Twitter. I'm not sure why it's filled with people you don't know to start with, but you're searching all of Twitter. You're not searching your own tweets. And searching your own tweets would actually be really handy, but they don't appear to have that. Now, you can actually use this to do a hashtag search, too. Just like I was talking about, you could search for pound Tunisia. Now, something like Tunisia isn't probably my best example for the hashtag example, because if it just has the word Tunisia in it, the name, that would be a good thing. You figure they're probably talking about what's going on. But MWE11, that's not really going to be in a lot of tweets, I would think, without the hashtag. Well, I think that's probably enough Twitter talk for one day, but just keep playing with it and you'll find your way. Don't forget to follow people with your interests and try to contribute too so that people follow you back. That makes Twitter way more fun. Well, next up, we've got George from Tulsa with another one of his unique stories.
On Monday, I was in our fireproof vault at work thinking about Allison's comments about backups in number 297 as I trolled through file folders looking for a 17-year-old document. That's pretty new paper. Some in our vault dates back to the early 1900s. Those are getting crinkly, but there's no trouble reading them. While we have lots of paper in our fireproof vault, we also store computer backups there. One covered the period through which I was searching and could have made finding what I needed easier. But I didn't bother. Why? Well, we used Windows back in 1993, and the most likely backup was spread over a set of Windows floppies by a proprietary program I don't even remember. Windows PC? No problem. 20-year-old program? Something else. And what's the chance every one of the many floppies would work after all these years? Not so good. Close by was a newer backup set, made after we upgraded to a tape drive. I remember tossing out the tape drive after it went clunk and ate a tape. No drive, no program, no backup. Our last Windows backup was made as we fled our Trojan-infested XP machines to the safer harbor of Mac. No proprietary software, no obsolete tapes. Simply CDs onto which I'd burn copies of all our Windows data files. CDs? Didn't Steve Jobs say my new Mac Air is the next generation of MacBooks? And isn't the biggest difference between the Air and the MacBook a missing optical drive? If you're archiving to CD or DVD, before you know it, those archives you burned might as well be burned. There's a couple of lessons here. If there's something you absolutely, positively have to keep, paper will outlive computers. But when your data, like digital pictures, has never been paper, you'll need to upgrade your backups as new technology evolves, or your backups will be as useless and inaccessible as old Microsoft multi-plan spreadsheets buried in that stack of old floppy drives stored in my vault of useless backups. Tune in next week, and I'll share how to encrypt gigabytes of your data using free Mac software and back up to the cloud, all for free.
George, you are such a tease. Well, I guess I'm going to have to wait till next week, just like everybody else, to find out the end of the story. You know, you have a great lesson here about backing up to the latest medium. Bart warned us to move our backup DVD collection of our home movies that were originally on VHS tape that Steve so lovingly made, he suggested move it onto a hard drive, and luckily we did heed his advice, so we're ready for the next format. All right, till next week then. Well, again, my cars are running smoothly, so I have no visit from Honda Bob to tell you about. I'm going to have him over to do another gadget review soon because he's done too good of a job of keeping care of our cars. They're running too well. You know, when he does come over, he's always on time, and I think I take that for granted, and I should mention that. I hate it when people are late, and he is always on time. He does a professional job, he works while I relax and bother him, he charges a fair price, and he cleans up after himself. You do have to put up with the bad jokes, but you know, it's worth it to have peace of mind while you're driving. If you live in the LA or Orange County areas, and you drive a Honda or an Acura, give Honda Bob a call at 562-531-2321 or send him an email at hdabob@aol.com. HDA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. Well, believe it or not, there is no big scary exploit out there going on. So it's another featherlight version of Security Light. As long as you're allowing your applications to update and you're running Apple software update utility and Windows Update is running on your Windows boxes and you're remembering to wake up your virtual machines, last week was Patch Tuesday, and running the updates there, then you can sleep well this week. Well, it's that time of the week again. It's time for Chit Chat Across the Pond. And this week we have the return of Nightwise from Nightwise.tv, the Nightcast, the Night Everything. How are you doing today, Nightwise?
I am doing fine. I like that, Return of the Nightwise. It's like, I don't know, some kind of final episode of a trilogy. I heard it before. I don't know where. It has to do something with a night as well.
I'd have to look
that up on Wikipedia.
Well, I'm excited to have you back again. You know, I always like chatting with you because you're technically competent and yet nearly off your rocker, near as I can figure.
Yes, yes, yes. Clinically insane, yet geeky as hell. So that's okay.
It's a good combo. It's a good combo.
It is.
So what do you want to talk about this week?
I've got some boxy stuff for you. I want to talk to you guys about a media center that you can actually use. And it's a cross-platform media center. It works on all kinds of platforms, Mac, Windows, Linux, Android, iOS. It works on your iPad, on your iPhone, on your iPod, on your Android phone. It works on your Apple TV. It works on a standalone box. It doesn't work on a blender yet. But
are you suggesting it makes technology work for you?
It is technology working for you.
That's one of Nightwise's taglines, by the way, and I love that because it's not about figuring out how to make things work, but how to make it work for you and do what you want to do, not what it wants to do necessarily.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Until the point in time where Skynet does become self-aware and we will have to bow down to the robot overlords, which I will pledge right now, hail to the robot overlords. I know you guys are coming. Until then, it's the dawn of man where we let technology work for us. So I always like tech and gadgets and stuff that are kind of easy to operate and which take less time to set up and maintain than to enjoy.
So as usual, we have to start with the problem to be solved. What problem are we solving here?
Okay, what problem are we solving? Well, basically, you have a lot of music on your computer. And you
I
have,
do?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Well,
we're talking about you. The generic yeah. you. Okay.
The average you. The average
normal
you
people.
Out there. Everybody except Allison, okay? Or you also have a lot of podcasts,
you
have
a
lot of pictures, you have
video?
A lot of movies,
right.
You have a lot of home video, and you have a lot of online content. You see, basically, if you pull out the cable TV in your house, you'll still be entertained for several hours because there's so much content that you can consume that's stored on your hard drives all over the place or that you can watch online. Now, there are all kinds of ways to do this. I mean, you can, you know, basically when I want to watch a movie, I go like, yeah, I'm on a computer and I can watch a movie. Okay, so I have to open up the movie and watch the movie. Or I can listen to music and I have to browse to the file and open up the music. Or there's this online thing that I want to do. And I just have to go to a browser and I watch the online thing. And it's basically interacting with media as if it were a computer. Now, what I like about television is basically I plop myself down on the couch and I have a remote. And I use the remote to basically steer the content my way. The problem with computers is that, well, computers aren't really built to steer all kinds of media your way. Thus, the problem. We have a problem that we have a computer, we have a lot of content, but there is no way to get that content, well, kind of pushed to you or brought to you in a way that is as convenient as doing it with television. Thus,
and boxing. It's complicated. It's hard.
Yes. Yes.
It's exhausting, even for geeks.
It is.
It's like, I mean, there are times I simply just read a book. You know, it's just like, okay, it's too hard to watch what I want to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen this. Well, because I'm most of the content that I watch is English content or a little bit of French content or a little bit of German content, but mostly English stuff. So TV, we have a lot of Belgian channels with Flemish television, and it doesn't really do it for me. So I like, you know, online content. And because being a child of the internet, I want to watch what I want to watch and not this, the X amount of rerun of Big Brother.
And not when they want you to watch it either.
There you go. Not when they want me to watch it.
I just watch no live TV at all. There's just no point in it.
I don't know. It's like being force-fed Brussels sprouts. I mean, you have to eat them, but, you know, not at 6 in the morning. But, you know, when they decide, well, it's time for Brussels sprouts, then you're going to have it. So,
you know, you've heard about Bart and I arguing about Brussels sprouts versus broccoli, right?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Who would voluntarily eat a Brussels sprout? That's just...
Well, Niana makes them with cheese sauce, and they're delicious.
Well, I do like just about anything covered in cheese.
Well, I don't know. I think broccoli is like the potato chips of vegetables. It's easy to pick up with your hands, it's crunchy, and it's good for you.
There you go. I like it. Anyway.
Well, if you want to, by the way, just to end up the Brussels sprout argument, if you want to win the Brussels sprout argument, feed one Brussels sprout to a dog and see what happens.
We're not going to get it back into the discussion of your puppy.
Okay.
We're not going there.
Okay.
All right. So here we have a problem to be solved. We've got all this great internet content and we want to shove it onto our TV so it feels like we're watching network broadcast TV, except we get to pick what we want to watch.
There you go. And what we want to watch and when we want to watch it.
Right.
Okay. And we don't want to interact with a keyboard and a mouse. Keyboard and a mouse means work.
Right.
Okay. A computer is actually built for work. So, I mean, I don't want to sit down in front of my computer with a keyboard and a mouse. Agreed. So the way of interacting with the content has to be kind of the same way like interacting with television. So one of the solutions that's out there. There are plenty of media centers out there. One of them is, for example, the Apple TV. You know, you get a little tiny remote, and, well, it's kind of a media center, and it's kind of Steve Jobs' shopping cart, because you can, you know, shop at Steve's Walmart and buy all kinds of stuff from Steve's Walmart thing, but it's, you know, just
I'd rather
Steve's
watch network TV, though, because it's Steve's Walmart. It's only what he wants me to watch, the way he wants me to watch it.
There you go.
And that drives me crazy.
Steve's Waldmart. Waldmart.
right.
Okay. So that's kind of like there. And then you have Windows Media Center, which is basically trying to, I don't know, let me get a good example here. Pimping a mule. Mules for work. And you know what they say, Windows Media Center, Steve Ballmer says, you know, we have to make a Windows Media Center. You know, we're going to put put a funny hat on the mule so it looks entertaining. But, you know, that's about it.
Put lipstick on a pig is another way to put
there
that one.
Yeah. Put lip and wings and and fancy colors. But it's basically still a pig.
Okay? Right.
Halfway through your movie, bing, there's an update available. Well, I don't want it for that.
Okay.
And then you get into the Linux corner. Okay, and these guys, they have like Mythbuntu, which is a special distribution, or MythTV actually, which is a special distribution that enables you to build one computer with 17 video cards in there, or TV capture cards that capture 17 streams and allow you to put that in the kitchen or in the basement. And then you have seven other computers in your house and they can stream from there in a master-slave setup. Basically, you know, it's like running a supercomputer. It's immensely powerful. You can actually, I think you can watch the beginning of Lost and the end at the same time, which kind of, if you combine them, ends up in a live stream that connects the front end of a wormhole to the back end of the same wormhole and implodes the universe. It's that complicated.
Okay, so we don't pick that either.
No.
Okay.
What I wanted to do is, and with the Myth TV, what's also a thing is, you know, it's a Myth TV server. It's like the machine does only Myth TV, and you know, I'm also not into that. So I wanted a little bit of a combination. I wanted to have a situation at home where I could basically watch the internet. Let's call it watch the internet, or watch my own content and the internet as if it were a TV. But I want the same convenience and the interface when I'm out and about with my laptops. Enter Boxy.
Okay.
Boxy is basically an application, and it's a server at the same time, and it's an aggregator. And
wait, I thought, you know, Boxy was a box.
And it's a box, and it's a hack, and it's a geek's best friend. It's kind of everything. So let me just start off by getting my notes here, because otherwise I am going to implode and have a paradoxical wormhole experience. Because my show notes look like the fourth season of Lost, by the way. So basically, it is an application that you can install cross-platform. Cross-platform, always good for me. I have a Windows machine in the house. Well, they're mostly outside in the rain because they haven't been behaving. I've got Macs in the house, and I've got Linux machines in the house. And yup-de-doo, it runs on everything. It runs on my Windows machine. I can run it on a Linux machine. I can run it on my Mac.
So I completely misunderstood this. I understood. I always hear people say Boxy box, but
it's also a box.
But I'm
it's
looking on the website on boxy.tv and it says buy a box or make a Boxy.
Ah, we're going to start out by make it a Boxy, because I'm not only.
Of course
only,
you are.
Yes, I'm not only incredibly intelligent, but I'm also a very, very cheapskate. I don't like spending money if I don't have to. And, you know. Because, you know, media stuff is just one thing. If I build a Boxy box myself, I wanted to do media. But, you know, if it's running and it's running some kind of form of Linux or Mac, I wanted to do other stuff as well. So I ended up making my first Boxy box myself on a computer that I have running in the house.
Okay. So I could do this on my Mac Mini that's hooked to my TV?
It would be absolutely perfect. So we'll start out with the example of your Mac Mini.
Okay.
Mac Mini is basically an uncastrated Apple TV.
Exactly.
Which means...
Which is why I bought it, because the castrated Apple TV just did not work for me.
There you go. Don't throw it away yet. Or you gave it away, didn't you?
Well, practically. I sold it for $50 to Jonathan. he said he'd give me $50 if I just shut the hell up about it.
You will regret this when I'm done with my little...
Oh, no. Mac. Well, I did try to hack it. I did the hack everybody does, and that just made it janky.
Yeah, but we'll get to that.
Okay.
So let's just start out with your hypothetical uncastrated Apple TV called the Mac Mini.
Okay.
So you've got some iTunes on there.
Right.
With podcasts or music or whatever.
Like the Nightwise. The Nightcast.
Yeah. I always like my own name with a "the" in front of it, the Nightwise. It sounds so much better. It's like, remember the milk or remember the Nightwise. Whatever. So you got your Mac Mini. You've got some content on there. You basically have some movies on there, which you either downloaded in the Apple Store or, you know, ripped yourself back up.
Of my legally owned material.
yes, of your legally owned material, in case of a fact that a meteor should strike the Earth and all the plastic in DVDs should suddenly turn to dust, which is very possible because we don't know all the meteors that are coming our way, and because of that, I'm backing up my my DVDs as well.
Right.
So you've got all those backed up DVDs on your Mac Mini. You've got your own home movies on there. You've got all of your pictures on there. And you've got a browser on there that you use to visit online content. So instead of, you know how it is. You basically set this thing up and you say like, yeah, it's a computer and it's hooked up to my TV. And then, you know, when you have to change, if you want to watch something, you have to interact with it with the mouse and with the computer desktop. So what you do is you install Boxy on it. Boxy's an application. So you don't have to run it all the time. It's not a dedicated service. You just double-click it, and it starts up.
Okay.
Now, Boxy will ask you, well, Ms. Sheridan, where are your movies? Well, you say, Mr. Boxy, my movies are in this directory. Oh, Ms. Sheridan, where are your pictures? Well, my pictures are over here. Thank you very much. Thank you, Ms. Boxy. Well, dear Ms. Sheridan, where is those three songs that you have and all of those podcasts? Well, my audio content's there. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sheridan. I will be right back. So what Boxy does is basically takes a look at all of the directories you've formulated, and these can be local or they can be on a NAS drive or on an external hard drive. Okay. Oh. Just say the directory. That can be locally, on an external drive, or via the network. And what Boxy does, it takes a look at it. It's like a little Wally. Goes like, oh, this is an audio. This is a video file. What is it? Oh, well, it looks like an episode from, I don't know, The Addams Family. Let me go on IMDb and get the album art for this and the synopsis and put that away. And it will index all of your pictures, all of your movies. It will recognize the difference between movies and TV shows. It will take a look at all of your music, and it will download the synopsis and the album art for 99% of the content that's on there.
Oh, wow. So it gives you rich information around it, not just a directory listing or something dopey like that?
Yeah. I mean, even if you – what I did is I threw in my iTunes directory. Mm-hmm. My iTunes directory says, like, Nightwise, I've got all your songs. And instead of organizing them, I have put them in a file structure that is unable to comprehend. And since you have 13,000 songs, there will be no way you will get them out of me without using iTunes. Mwahaha. See? Now, what I've done is I said, dear Mr. Boxy, here's my iTunes directory. And what Boxy does, like the little Wally, just takes every song, goes like, blah, 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 cling. Okay, that's that song. This is the album art. I'll put that there. It doesn't move them, but it indexes them itself. And it gives you the ability to play that content using the Boxy interface. So
wow, this is great.
Yep, it will literally set your content free.
So now how much does it cost, though?
How much do you think?
What would you pay? Would you pay $99 for this? $50.
Guess again.
Wait a minute. It's you I'm talking to. It's free, isn't it?
It's free.
Really?
Absolutely. Now, so, this is on. Yeah.
Well, when I'm done now, I still have to use a remote control and a keyboard. I mean, I have to use a mouse and a keyboard, don't I?
No, you don't.
What do I use?
Because, you can choose. Well, Boxy is also a server. And you can tell Boxy, you know what, Boxy, you're on my network, yeah? If I were to go to the iOS Apple Store, or I would go to the Android Market, I can there download Boxy remotes, which are very little apps that run on your iPhone, your iPod Touch, or your iPad, and which allow you to navigate through the Boxy menu. Because basically, you can just navigate through the movies and the settings with arrow keys, and those are featured on the little remote. And you have a play and a pause button, so you can play and pause your movies and your music, and you can browse through the menus using a very simple interface. And if you should need to enter text, it will give you a little on-screen keyboard. So you can use your iPhone or your iPod Touch or your iPad or your Android device to control your Boxy box. The client application will automatically take a look on your network and go like, oh, there's a Boxy box. You want to control that one? Yes.
Oh, wow.
Please. So,
now, do those cost money?
Nope. Of course not. Those are free.
We're talking to the cheapskate Nightwise.
I am a cheapskate Nightwise. You see, part of the letting technology work for you is the fact that you don't have to go out to your day job and make money to pay that technology. So you don't work for technology, literally. So you don't go outside and work and make money and put that money into technology. This
Hey, you know what? I just looked, and the iPad versions cost money, but the iPhone ones do not.
Yes, but you do not need the iPad version, because basically you need four big arrow keys, a volume slider, and a button. There are no other functionalities.
So having a big fat one, that might be easy. When you're drunk, you can hit the buttons and everything, right?
I've used it on the iPad, and you can really slap it with the palm of your hand. It's really nice.
Okay.
So, now we've set up the boxing machine, and you've got, and you're already impressed, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, I'm loving it.
Okay, that's good. You know, then you go like, this is the content that I have.
Yeah, what about the content I don't have?
Well, you can link Boxy to your Twitter and your Facebook account. So every time somebody posts a link to a movie, Boxy will automatically pick it up, put it on the front page of your Boxy box with a little icon saying like, look, your friend is listening to this, to this, to this, and to this.
Hmm.
In the middle, there's a column with the featured movies that Boxy itself presents. These are online video fragments from all over the place.
Hmm.
And you can browse through that, and that's, you know, content being pushed your way. You don't have to choose every time. Sometimes Boxy chooses for you. You can choose to let Boxy choose for you, or you can choose to let your friends choose for you. Or you can say, like, I want to choose. So there are a lot of Boxy apps out there. And these are, you know, kind of like Lego blocks that add on to your Boxy software to get content into your Boxy box.
Hmm.
So instead of browsing to, is it Vimeo?
Yeah.
Instead of browsing to Vimeo and browsing through the movies, there's a Vimeo application that clicks on. You just go to the apps menu. There's a big button that says Vimeo. You enter, and then there a Vimeo application starts up that allows you to browse the Vimeo movies. And there's a Flickr application, and there's a Last.fm application. And some podcasts like Geekbeat have their own application. So you can basically pick and choose from the Boxy App Store to install these free applications and expand the knowledge or the possibilities of your Boxy box. There's the weather channel. There's the gym channel. You can actually add a gym channel to there, and you can do gym workouts. You see, like TV stations, they just click onto your Boxy, and that way you can pull in all kinds of Boxy things.
So you do most of that through the apps menu, you're saying?
Yep. So you haven't touched a keyboard yet.
Okay.
All via the apps menu. Very easy. Point and click, point and click, point and click, point and click. So you can just add all kinds. Now, PG plus 18, there are also applications that pull in naughty stuff.
Okay.
So you can make your Boxy box into a naughty box.
But we don't have to make it a naughty box, right?
No. There's a lot of content on the internet, and Boxy can kind of pull it your way. There's also a lot of naughty content on the internet, and Boxy can even do that. But that's, you know, you have to find out yourself. What I just want to say is that there are official apps, but you can expand the possibility of the Boxy box by adding extra repositories to the Boxy box. Just like with Ubuntu, the more repositories that you add, the more applications you can install.
Hmm. Okay.
That's the app side. Then there's, of course, your stuff. Sometimes I browse, you know, I'm at work and I see a little video clip and I think like, ah, damn, I really want to watch this, but I don't have the time because, you know, if the boss man comes, not a good thing. So there's a little bookmarklet that you can put inside your Firefox or your Chrome that basically says, watch it later. So whenever I'm on a little movie, I go like, oh, I want to watch this, watch it later. I want to watch this, watch it later. I want to watch this, watch it later. When I get home, it has made an RSS feed and has all of these movies that I've tagged ready and available for me to watch.
Now, I would really like that because I'm frequently in a situation where I can't play the video. You know, I'm sitting in a meeting, but I'm screwing around looking at Facebook or something. You know, I'm really paying attention mostly, but somebody sends me a link to a video or a Twitter video or something like that, and I'm going to forget to do that later.
That's what Boxy does as well. if there are some kinds of applications that you don't find in the Boxy App Store, you can just, you know, tell Boxy, look, this is an RSS feed that I want to follow. Add this to my apps. So you give it an RSS feed, like, for example, the Nightcast, and it will make a little button out of it in the applications that you have. So you can just browse through, click on the Nightcast, and then you get all the episodes. And you can just point and click which one you want to watch.
Oh, no, that's kind of interesting. So it starts just doing normal streaming instead of having to subscribe and download and iTunes and sync and all that crap.
I do that to a lot of video podcasts because I don't always have the time to watch. And I think it's kind of a shame of the bandwidth that I download it and I don't watch it.
Right,
so what I've
right.
done is I've subscribed to all those RSS feeds from those video podcasts, and I can kind of browse through them on my Boxy box and watch what episodes I want to watch. Sometimes, you know, I stream those episodes.
Yeah, I definitely feel that way about video. Audio, I want them on my iPod, and I want to be able to sequentially go through and usually listen to the whole thing. But video, I don't know, video is different.
Then there's also the fact that I've got, for example, let's say you're a person that downloads movies from the internet, legally or illegally. That's your prerogative.
I don't know those kind of people.
Yeah, you know, if you're R or if you're, you know, if you have the iTunes account and you buy everything, or you're the R, I'm a pirate, doesn't really matter. Let's say there's content coming in to a certain directory. For example, you know, a download application that dumps videos into a certain directory. You can tell Boxy, hey, Boxy, this is a directory that I use for my downloads. I want you to keep an eye on that, and every time a file comes up, I want you to see what it is, a movie or a TV show or music, and put it in the content menu. So every time something gets downloaded, Boxy automatically picks it up and puts it right in front of you in the Boxy interface.
But again, not copying it, just knows it's there.
Knows it's there. Boxy is aware.
Okay.
So that's the Boxy server stuff.
By the way, I've installed the Boxy server and I'm running it and I'm playing with it right now.
It is, and as you can tell, it's very easy.
Yeah, I'm not listening to anything you're saying, but I'm having fun here with this. So
okay, now then you say like, well, Nightwise, that's kind of cool, but what about you know, the other stuff? My laptop. You said something about using Boxy in other places. So I've told you about running Boxy as a server, and now I'm going to talk to you about running Boxy on every other thing that you have. Downstairs, I've got all my content on my server, and that can be on my server, or that can be on my NAS drive, or whatever. Now, on my laptops, I've also installed Boxy, and I've told Boxy, hey, Boxy dude, my content is on that network drive.
Okay.
And Boxy goes over and it enumerates it and it puts it ready for me. And because I have set all my applications and all of my settings using my Boxy account online, you have to sign up for Boxy, not because they want your email address and want to spam you, but because they want to know which channels you want to subscribe to. And every time you set up a Boxy box, they will copy those settings to Boxy installation. So, for example, here in our bedroom, we've got a big monitor. We don't have a TV, so we got a big monitor. So what I did is I installed Boxy on my laptop. When we want to watch a movie in bed, I just take my laptop upstairs, hook up the second screen, launch Boxy. Using my Apple remote, I can interact with Boxy and the Boxy installation on my laptop. I've told it to get its content downstairs on my file server.
Oh.
So I'm using the Boxy application as an interface. Now, I know one of the questions that you got in one of the previous podcasts was like, well, if I run content on my screen, it shows up on the two screens, or you see one screen and I'm really distracted when I play a movie. I want to play it full screen and don't have to. So you can basically tell Boxy, you know what? Every time you boot up on my little laptop here, you're going to see if that second screen's hooked up and you're going to play full screen on the second monitor and just leave the other monitor be.
Oh, good.
And then, you know, I hop into bed, I snap up my iPod Touch, I activate my iPod Touch. My iPod Touch in this case says, well, Mr. Nightwise, there are two boxy servers in the house. One of them is the server downstairs. The other one is your laptop. Which one do you want me to interact with? Well, Mr. iPod boxy application, I would like you to interact with my laptop.
And so, so each time you go in, it's asking that so it knows to not be screwing up the other one?
Yeah, it actually sees the two boxy servers and asks you which one you want to interact with.
Actually, that's good because Niana could be downstairs messing around with boxy on one server and you're upstairs messing around with the one on yours. You don't want your remote messing with hers.
There you go. And even if you have, for example, take the example of your Mac Mini, even Steve could be, you know, having the iTunes library open and downloading podcasts. You could be on another computer interacting to those media files with Boxy, and you could just work parallel. You can have several Boxy boxes running at the same time, accessing different content because they don't take hold of the content. They just access and enumerate the content.
It's just pointing to it.
Yep.
Very cool.
So on your laptop, it's a great tool as well. You can even say to your Boxy box, like, you know, there's media on the network, but if that's not available, there's also media here. Or you're at work and you have a second screen. Why not run Boxy on the second screen? Because, you know, then you can watch TV or you can watch online content or all the streams that you want on a second monitor in a totally different environment.
This is getting pretty interesting. Then, what's the downside of this? This has got to be, like, what, fattening or something?
No, it's very light because it streams content.
No, but I mean, there's got to be a downside here. What don't you like about Boxy? I'm not going to believe you. If you don't tell me something bad, it's green.
It's green. That's about the only thing I can say is green.
That's a bad thing, huh?
By the way, I threw everything at the kitchen sink at this. You know, I've got like an exotic amount of media files downstairs with all kinds of crazy content. You need the bandwidth. That's okay. I mean, don't. If you still have a coaxial network at home, you know, with those little B and C terminators, 10 megabits. Not going to do it, baby. No, not going to work. So you need some bandwidth, at least internal. And when you watch a lot of online content, it's going to suck up some bandwidth.
All right.
And when you put the naughty stuff on it, you've got to be sure that either your wife agrees or knows about it. I mean, or doesn't know about it. That's also a downside. Whatever. But there's basically not a lot of downsides to it. You can take it even one step further. Remember that neutered Mac Mini that you had?
Yeah. Or you mean the one that was called an Apple TV?
Yeah. It runs Boxy.
Not out of the box.
No.
That's when you hack it.
Yeah. You have to take Steve's Walmart and you just break it by shoving in a USB stick and you can run Boxy on the second and the first generation Apple TV.
Yeah, I did that hack on that, and I'm telling you, that's why I don't have a Mac Mini in my. Why I don't have a neutered Mac Mini in my house. I have a real one, because it was just things got janky.
Did you really run Boxy on it?
Well, I'm trying to remember. I may not have been Boxy, but I definitely did that hack where you use the USB stick and ATV Flash.
Yeah, but it got all nasty. Yeah, but it kind of depends what you run on it. Because the cool thing is Boxy doesn't use the internal storage or doesn't copy stuff around. It really just streams across the network locally or from the internet.
Okay.
So that's a possibility as well. But if you don't have a neutered Mac Mini and you still have a G4 Mac Mini, well, you can use that as well.
There you go.
There you go.
In my case, I've gotten I've got a pretty new Mac Mini, not the newest form factor, but a pretty new one. And we've got a lot of, I'm starting to pull our home movie videos into it. Just started that this week.
Yep.
So that could be fun.
Yeah. And even if you got the old G4 Mac Mini, which is basically an elevated version of the Apple TV right now, because it's PowerPC, why not use that for Boxy? That's also a great solution. I mean, those things have like crappy RAM, 512 megabytes. They have like a small hard disk. And they don't have a fast processor, but they do Boxy front end very well. So that's also a possibility.
Nice use of it.
Indeed. But if you don't have a neutered Mac Mini, or you don't have an Apple TV, or you don't have a Linux machine that's running as a spare, and you really want your Boxy box, you can buy the Boxy box. 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 How many boxes are in there? The Boxy box. It's made by D-Link, and it's basically a very, very small Linux machine that runs Boxy. It can talk to the network, to all of your online storage. You know, it can talk to all of the streams that you pulled in that we talk about, and it can talk to all of the NAS drives in your house, or you can even hook up FireWire and USB 3 external hard drives to it, and it will basically Boxy for you. And it has a Boxy remote, and it looks really cool.
Yeah, I noticed. It was kind of cool looking. It's like they took a cube and then chopped a corner off so it sits diagonally.
Yep, yep. Because Boxy's so awesome, it doesn't need four corners. And there is one downside to the Boxy box.
What's that?
It's green.
We're back to that. So what? Yeah, how much does that one cost? Do you know?
I think it's about, if I haven't seen it here yet, but I think it's about $200.
Okay.
Not very cheap. Let's see, but not very expensive, and you know,
well,
it
compared
works
to the price of the Mac Mini. I mean,
and it has HDMI out.
Sweet.
Yes.
Let's see. Yeah, $199 on Amazon.
And if you order via Allison's website,
she gets a little tiny bit towards the show.
And if you don't, we'll shoot a puppy.
And you have one that's irritating you right now. You could do it. You could do it.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
He doesn't shoot puppies. I'm making that up.
No. We have a new puppy, and we're very fond of it. And it's really barking up the house right now. I don't know if you can hear it, but it's super sweet. So we love puppies.
This is very cool. I got to play with this. I've installed it, and this might really be handy. Let me ask a question: is there a way to remotely get to any of this stuff now? Like if I'm out and about, can I get to it on my iPad or anything like that?
Well, you can basically run TeamViewer on the Mac Mini and TeamViewer is a remote application that lets you remotely control the desktop of any computer. It runs on Windows, Linux, and the Mac, and you can control Windows machines using Linux machines, Linux machines using Windows machines. Windows machines can be used to control Mac machines. Mac machines can be used to control Linux machines. Linux machines can be used to control Windows machines. You get my drift.
Wow.
It works also on Android and iOS devices. And with the iPad, what I do is I can use the remote application TeamViewer to remotely control my Linux server that runs Boxy and interact with the Boxy box.
So TeamViewer is a server-side application that you put on the Mac or PC or Linux box that you want to get the stuff off of. So that's completely independent of Boxy. That's another thing.
That's a whole other chit-chat.
Okay, cool. Well, we'll just have that as a teaser then. Maybe next time.
Maybe next time we'll let you control Windows machines using Linux machines, or Linux machines using Windows machines, or Windows machines using Mac machines, or Mac machines using Windows machines, or Mac machines using Linux machines, or Linux machines using Mac machines, or iOS devices using Android devices. You get my drift.
Okay. Settle down.
It's also free.
Oh, my gosh. We'll have to check that out.
And there's one downside.
Oh, is it green?
It's blue.
Oh, there we go. Well, is there anything else you needed to talk to us about Boxy? Because we did want to talk about the puppies.
Yes, try Boxy.
All right, I will. I will work on it. I'm excited. I'm playing with it. It's pretty too. It even tells me the temperature.
Yes, there are also a lot of applications that you can do to the weather channel and stuff like that. I really like it because it's more than, you know, just the media center that you install on the TV. It's the media center that you install everywhere, and that kind of works together.
You're good. I don't think it has a temperature right. It says it's 34F here, and it's actually about 75F here. It's 24 degrees in LA.
We're doomed. We're doomed. Boxy got the temperature wrong. Well, it's not a thermometer. It's basically a media front end. So
there's probably a setting I need to tell it where I live or something.
It's probably set to Antarctica or something.
So the next question on our agenda is, why do you name your dogs after Star Trek characters?
Good question. We've had our first dog was kind of fluffy and very cute, and he was very endearing. So we were looking for a name, and because of the color of his hair and stuff, we came up with Neelix.
What a great name. What a great dog.
Yeah. Neelix was fantastic. We've kind of, set that trend because we're just, basically nerds. We just do that. So we have a cat, and you've met the cat. We won't go into detail.
One of our the funniest cat, things that happened on our trip, but we won't go into that.
We are deeply embarrassed. Our cat lives in our bathroom. We have a big bathroom with a big couch in there, and it's nice and warm, and it kind of lives there. So it lives upstairs, and it oversees the entire house. So she's kind of like the major, so we called her Major Kira.
Oh.
Our cat's called Kira. And then we had our dog, our second dog, which was black, and he had like a big mustache, and he was kind of bulky. So
isn't he also a Scottish Terrier?
Yes. He's a German Schnauzer, actually. Oh. Mini Schnauzer. But he looks kind of like a terrier, too. So, of course, we named him Scotty. And now we got a new puppy, and it's a Shiba Inu, which is a Japanese dog, small Japanese dog. And there's only one character that we could choose, which was, of course, Sulu. So
now why Sulu? I would have gone like Chapel, because it's a girl, right?
Yeah, we had that. We were actually doubting. I didn't say which Sulu.
Hmm?
There's also Demora Sulu.
Who's
Demora
that?
Sulu is the daughter of Hikaru Sulu. She's actually the helmsman of the Enterprise B in Star Trek Generations. But we were downing between Dax.
Oh, or, Dax would be a good name too.
Yeah, and when puppies don't have their they need some injections in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
and I can tell you by the stuff that comes out on the rear end, they do have worms inside of them. So Dax would have been appropriate.
Yikes!
Yeah, puppies are cute, just a pet, and if they're by somebody else, but. You don't want to know what you get into the house. If people have puppies, you know what I mean. But the first few days, it's amazing.
But like the cat situation, we're not going to talk about that either.
No. It's gross. I mean, babies have diapers. Puppies do not. Just leave it at that.
So I had some. What if you had a really nasty looking dog? Like you got a pit bull or something. You could name it Borg.
No, we would name it Khan.
Khan.
Khan. And when he doesn't come back, you can just, go outside and go like James T. Kirk on him.
Khan!
Or when you step into something that he left behind. Khan! Really nice. Yeah.
Actually, it would be a nice, because sometimes those two-syllable, three-syllable names, they're hard to yell at a dog when you do that, right?
Yeah, we always take two-syllable names because you can put a lot of influations.
Or emphasis.
Yeah. You can go like Scotty or Swaddy or Sulu. Sulu. You can just, the dog knows it's my name, but the way it's pronounced, it's a whole new message.
I'm looking at pictures online of Shiba Inus, and they're, it is a neat looking little dog.
They're
tiny, too. I didn't realize how small she was till you had a picture of her next to Scotty. I was like, whoa, she's really small.
Yeah, but she's growing. I think this dog's made out of yeast for 90% because she's growing like you would believe. Normally, she would be a foot high, maximum height when she's mature.
Wow.
And if you don't know what a Shiba Inu looks like, of course, you've Googled it by now. Right. But think Japanese manga dog. This is really, if a Japanese guy, cartoonist, draws a dog, it's mostly a Shiba Inu, which is a small variant. Or the Akita Inu, which is the larger variant.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've heard of Akitas before. I didn't know this was the same variety or the same family or something.
Yeah, this is like the Hobbit cousin.
They're really cute. Yeah, it says males 14.5 to 15, 16.5 inches, females 13.5 to 15.5.
Yeah.
Wow, 23 pounds. That's tiny. Or to 17 for her.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And but I've seen people who thought it was husky dogs. Mm-hmm. Oh, look, it's a tiny husky. Are you blind? I mean, and then the worst one, a chihuahua.
Oh, no.
At which point I nearly had a...
That's when you call your dog Khan over to deal with that person, right?
No, I mostly turn the puppy around and hope that I get lucky.
All right. Well, this is going to go downhill if I let you go any farther. So we should.
Well, not as bad as the guy from the Mac Crack.
Yeah, thank goodness we don't have them on. I'm just saying.
Yep.
All right, now, why don't you tell people all the different ways they can find you?
Very easy. www.nightwise.com. That's KNIGHTWISE.com. That's the website. There you can find, if I have the time, I write some articles. If I have the time, I do a video podcast. The last one that we did was an extensive review of the new iPod Touch. There are, if you go right now, there are still the live versions of the KWTV live show that we did at the end of last year are still online. Those are 2 4-hour online live radio sessions with interviews and everything. And if you want to see what I tweet about or want to see nice little pictures of the puppy, you can go to twitter.com/nightwise. That's KNIGHTWISE.com. If you're on Google Earth and you're really lucky, you can well, I am somewhere on Google Earth pointing up and waving, so I'm not going to tell you where on the planet, but you just have to zoom in far enough and you'll get lucky somehow. I think that's about it.
That should do it. Hey, I do appreciate how consistent you've been with your podcast lately. You've been really marching to a schedule there. And that's, I always said it was okay that you didn't, because, oh, it was just like a little treat in your podcast feed. But I like my treats more often.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I'm almost, now with holidays, it didn't really work out, but I'm pumping them out bi-weekly at the most, weekly when I'm really good. And I've got a lot of interesting stuff on the agenda. Teasing you there, I've got a video podcast coming up about TeamViewer, how to use it.
Oh,
I've got a audio or video podcast, depends, coming out about Boxy. And we are going to talk about how to use your iPod Touch to become a one-man podcast, video podcast producing band.
Oh, shoot. Girls can't use it?
Well, person then. Podcasting. One-person band.
Maybe you meant man in the Star Trek sense, you know, where no man has gone before.
Yeah, but we don't call a manhole a person hole either.
I don't want to go down there anyway.
Yeah, there you go. See?
All right. Like I said, it would slip down the rat hole if I didn't cut you off, and I'm going to cut you off here. Thank you so much for joining us again this week, Nightwise. Say hi to Niana.
Will do. She sends her regards together with the puppies, and we'll be doing fine around here. Thank you for having me.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, I hope you had fun this week. I had a grand time, as always, with the chat room. We had Tim from iPad Possibilities was in the chat room for the first time. That was a lot of fun, joining all the usual knuckleheads. And we had Captain Mac again. He just came back the last time, I think. Last show was his first time, maybe a couple back. Anyway, his real name's Denny, and it's so hard to keep all these things together, but I am starting to learn everybody's name. It's so much fun in there, I'm telling you. We have a great time. I also had a great time this week. It was a real treat. Steve and I had dinner with Stu Helm of the International Mac Podcast last night, and we had such a good time with him. I'm telling you, we know how to show somebody a good time. We took him out to dinner, and then we took him to the Department of Motor Vehicles in Culver City. It just didn't get any better than that, I'm telling you. Well, until next week, send your dumb questions, comments, and suggestions to me at allison@podfeet.com, and be sure to follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/podfeet. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.